couple of notes here before we begin this Air Force preview hour. Looks like it's now our first for the Mountain Division side. We had planned to do New Mexico, but apparently there were some tech issues or gremlins got into our computer files, and it didn't work out as well. And so when we refer back to the Lobos or New Mexico in this show, just disregard. We'll get that up at a future date. Not entirely sure when at the moment. And there's a couple of audio issues you may hear on this one. We're trying to work those out, which we believe we have going forward. So hopefully the adjustments we made work well. Now let's kick it to the theme song, and we'll begin our Mountain Division preview with Air Force.
What you want? We got a mighty hard to listen, but it makes your rage glisten. Our voice is about the games. And you know we talk about the latest goings, more so than any other, and our Mountain West matters. Well, well, you listen to this podcast too. And you rant about this podcast too. Just a side where Jeremy analyzes some matches and cast the grin the bridges. We do some good interviews. And you know from Fresno all the way to Boise, from Logan down to Aston, they're calling out our name. Where will you listen to this podcast too. And you love this podcast.
All right, welcome back into the latest Mountain West Connection podcast. We're chugging along on the Mountain site here. We're going to talk Air Force Falcons tonight. Our website, if you don't know, MWCConnection.com. Facebook, Mountain West Connection, Twitter. You can figure it out, MWC Connection. And, yeah, the Falcons. Jeremy Moss is always with Chris Andres, and the newly, if it sounds a bit better, Matt Kennerly is joining us with some new equipment this evening.
Fingers crossed it holds up.
Or whenever you're listening to this.
USAF, USAF.
Wait, isn't there supposed to be an A on the end of that?
Yes. I said A, and then I followed it up with F because we're doing the whole Air Force show, and I want to like kind of avoid the fact that I'm watching the USA game at the same time.
We mean USAFA.
Yeah, I thought it was USAFA for Academy.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
And that is correct. And the reason we're talking about that, because this is actually, I don't know when this is going out, but it's probably July, but we're about to watch the Ecuador-USA game. So don't tell us what happened, folks. So we're going to be watching at this time. So we'll see if they move on.
If you hear me squealing joyfully, you'll know what happened.
Yeah, but by then we all know what happened. So we'll see. Falcons, Air Force. Let's just get right to it because all these shows have been long and I don't want to make them too long. So we have Air Force last year.
Wait, you don't like talking 80 minutes about New Mexico?
No, I love it. I'm just, I got an early start tomorrow, so I don't want to, and an hour drive home after because I'm not recording at my house. So that's all. Blame me for wanting to do whatever and all this stuff. No, but Air Force, okay. So last year, pretty big turnaround. They ended up, what did they go from 2 to 10 wins? I should know this, but they improved quite a bit. Mountain West title game, losing to Air Force or San Diego State in the title game. And are they officially back? Was last year just like kind of like our 2013 kind of an abnormality? Because that was kind of the 2012, 2013. Past 2 years have been quite the upswing.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the way that their roster, you know, shuffles over from year to year, there's inevitably going to be some peaks and valleys. And considering the constraints that the Academy has to work with, you know, I would admit, you know, oftentimes those peaks and valleys are higher and lower than they would be perhaps at other places in the conference. So they were a super young team in, what was it, 2014?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they, you know, they had some bad luck. They had some injuries.
Well, as a quarterback, then they have like three guys go down.
Yeah, so then, you know, year before they put it all together, won 10 games, and then last year they put it all together, or they kept it together rather, and they won a division title. And I don't see any reason to think that things are going to be that much different, considering they have so many important pieces coming back. I mean, if anything, I think the time is now for them to win a conference title.
Ooh, conference title.
Yeah, and even more so. And really, they had chances to win the title last year, if you remember last year's title game.
They were in the title game. How is that? What other chance do you need? You were
there. I meant within the game, mm-hmm. within the game itself. I mean, it wasn't as if, you know, you were – it wasn't as if, like, San Diego State was blowing them out. It was a hard fought between two teams, and San Diego State really just eked out the win at the very end. But this year, absolutely. You have Nate Romine, who's going to be a senior this year. You have other seniors who are coming back, especially in that defensive side, who showed their strength last year, and they should only be getting stronger. This should be a good chance to compete for the Mountain West title should nobody else in the Mountain get in their way.
We'll see. The quarterback situation, they lose Carson Roberts, but Nate Romine is not like this newbie. He's played the past couple years. Like you said, the 2014 year, they were pretty bad, like a QB, multiple injuries. The only thing I want to see more, because the Air Force offense, we know what it is. It's the run option attack. Carson Roberts was a pretty good thrower. 11 interceptions is not ideal, but he had 11 touchdowns and almost 1,600 yards. And for this offense to be better, not better, but just kind of be what they are, because, yeah, they have Jacoby Owens running the ball. He'll have over 1,000 yards. DJ Johnson, whoever else, McVay back there, who's shown some touchdown capabilities. They also have one of the best wideouts in Jalen Robinette. And so quarterback, my main concern of quarterback is getting at least 1,200 yards in the air.
I mean, on the one hand, you want to know, or you want to see Nate Romine stay healthy, because he was the starter last year, and then he got hurt in week two against San Jose State, and that's when Roberts came in and stepped up and played, you know, better than Romine might have. I was doing some research, and I looked up this number, and this really surprised me. And I have to give credit to Brent Bergerman from the Colorado Springs Gazette for this, but it says the week one starter for Air Force in the last 3 years, they played 39 games. The starter week one has played just 15 of those games.
Ooh.
So potentially it's not necessarily, you know, I mean, obviously the starting quarterback, him staying healthy is going to be really important, but whoever emerges from behind him could also be a really critical development. And I think there were some questions coming out of the spring game as to who that would be. There was a couple sophomores on the depth chart, Arion Werthmann and Ryan Brand, who kind of each had their ups and downs throughout the spring. And based on everything that I read, I think that Werthmann had a little bit of an inside track. But, you know, they mentioned that Brand came in with more hype than you typically see in an Air Force quarterback. You know, he was a three-star recruit 5 years ago. So if either one of those guys steps up and really seizes the job in the fall, it isn't out of the question that you can see a lot of playing time if things don't break away. If that happens, how does one sophomore or the other respond?
And remember that, you know, you want to see a quarterback pick up 1,200 yards, you know, through the air. But remember that this is a triple option a team, so it's going to be a super run-heavy attack. Now, that being said, last year, Air Force had, I think, what was it, a couple games that were over 200 yards, correct?
You mean individual?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, so that was a lot bigger of a passing team. That was a lot more of a passing team than what we had seen in quite some time. But I'm not sure, even with Romine at the helm, and this guy is his senior, it's his last chance, and he's played before, but I'm not sure if we're going to see that same style passing big play attack.
Well, but they kind of need to. They don't. Well, I say kind of, because with Robinette there, he's one of the best receivers in the conference. So you can't have this guy who with his capabilities, catch three passes a game.
No, but his catch rate was only 45%. So, as one of the best receivers in the game, your pass rate still can't be that low.
See, I think a lot of that is kind of what we talked about with New Mexico last time, where it's not so much an efficiency off, passing game as much off the passing game that takes shots down the field. You know, if you look at what Carson Roberts was able to do last year, he averaged 10.8 yards per pass attempt. And that was the best in the conference by about a yard and a half. So, you know, the question I have is whether Romine can match that. My understanding that he's supposed to be a little bit better as a passer than Carson Roberts was, but, you know, like I said, that kind of remains to be seen because he's been off the field more than he's been on it in the last couple of years.
So is it? Can we assume it's going to be Carson Roberts because Brand split time in spring? I think it should be.
Romine. Carson Roberts is
oh,
gone.
Sorry, yes. Romine. I was staring at Roberts' name. I was looking up the stats or something. No, I mean, Romine, is it? Because I forgot they split reps during spring camp. And so, but it should.
Well, it's simply going to be Romine because nobody else behind him has played a snap, and that's not how Air Force's system runs. You're not going to stick a brand new guy in there. Troy Calhoun has always been kind of very methodic with how he plays his positions and whatnot.
Okay, so let's assume it's Romine, which very likely should be the case, but with their splitting time, it's not for sure. What does Romine need to do on the ground? Because last year in limited time had 111 yards, about 5 yards a carry, which was slightly better than Carson Roberts. What does he need to do? Does he need to have 1,000 yards, 600 yards? What should he be doing in this running game?
Not creating opportunities for himself to get about 4 yards a carry.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at what the Falcons quarterbacks have done historically over the last several years, they've been averaging somewhere between 4 and 4.5 yards per carry. So I think if Romine can do that, I think that, you know, that's the kind of thing when you have so many options in the backfield, you don't need necessarily a dynamic runner who can chew up big plays, just a guy who can, you know, manage the offense and ground out. A first and 10, make it a more manageable second and 6 for whoever he hands off to on that next down.
Okay, now since we're doing the running game, let's go to running backs. So you got Jacoby Owens, who's finally, well, seems like he's been there forever. He's also another guy whose health has been a concern here and there. Is this the year he maybe gets up there with like Paul Harris, Donald Pumphrey, Brian Hill for rushing prowess?
No, because that's, once again, that's not the way Air Force works. They go about 3 or 4 guys deep. And so when you have Jacoby Owens being the main guy, you're also going to see, you know, DJ Johnson, who is a fantastic fullback, by the way.
Fullback?
And runs
What's
the
that?
Option very well.
What's a fullback?
It's these things that the Midwestern schools use.
Oh, so boring Big Ten football. Gotcha.
Well, no. Yes. Not only that, wasn't it, you know, Timothy McVeigh who really came on strong at the end of last year?
And I was going there as well. Absolutely. This is McVeigh to lose as kind of a 1B spot. And he's really going to be, I think, even more of a dynamic player than Owens is, as exactly as Matt said. He came on strong last year.
Well, his touchdowns, he had 51 touches on the ground for 9 scores.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I wish I knew how many different running backs had 100-yard games last year for the Falcons, because I feel like it was at least 2 or 3. So, you know, Jacoby Owens might be the head guy at tailback, but he may not be the guy who gets a lot of attention from week to week. It could be someone like Shane Davard. It could be someone like Johnson, like Chris mentioned, or it could be McVeigh, or even someone like Brian Driscoll, who's a senior but averaged, you know, 7 yards per carry last year. I don't think they're going to have one workhorse, and I don't think they really need to have one workhorse in order to make the offense run.
I agree and disagree. I think they need one guy. Like, Owens had 1,000 yards. They need one guy to be the guy they can count on for consistently. Like, the carries can be split, because if you look at last year, this is pretty rare as well, 205 carries. McVeigh came in, But McVeigh had 53, DJ Johnson 82, quarterback Roberts had 168. And so it's going to be the quarterback and the main running back. I still think you need a guy to be your main back, but second, third, fourth, fifth guy is where they're going to mix it in. But I kind of think there's a hierarchy. I think it's going to be Owens, quarterback, enroll mine there. Probably McVay, DJ Johnson. Those are probably the guys. Maybe Driscoll, but when McVay has 9 touchdowns, Johnson has 6 touchdowns as your third and fourth guy. I know there's a lot of guys at quarterbacks. Like last year, Shane Devereaux had 4 touchdowns, Ben Washington 4 touchdowns, a lot of different guys back there. I still think they need one guy to be the guy, because there's a couple times when Owens was hurt where they weren't playing very well when he had to leave the game, or historically the past couple years with the Air Force. Whoever is a starter or the perceived starter, they go down, and there's been some concerns. And so I think they do need one guy to kind of not go for 1,800 yards, but about 1,000 yards is what they need from their top back.
I mean, you may have a point. I was just going back through the numbers over the years, and you know, Owens had 206 carries last year, and there was only one guy since 2008 who had more carries, and that was Jared Tue back in 2009. You know, but even then, they had, like, you know, back in that 2009 season, Air Force had, like, 5 or 6 guys who had at least 50 carries. So, you know, to me, the question is not so much whether you have kind of a guy who can run the football 20 times a game. It's these guys further down on the depth chart. Are they going to average 7 yards a carry again, like Shane Davern and Brian Driscoll did again? Or is it going to be closer to 5? And if that happens, how does Air Force kind of adjust to that reality? Because to me, you know, if they go back to their 2014 numbers and start averaging, you know, 4.5 yards per carry rather than 5.5 like they did last year, that could make a difference.
Could be. One quick thing about, really quick, before we get to other backs and Chris can chime in. Owens had 204 carries in 14, but missed the final 3 games. So he would have shattered last year's 206. He probably had close to 240 carries last in 2014.
Interesting. So then, if we're going to settle, because I'm firmly settled on whoever the primary back is, I think it's just you have so many guys that doesn't even matter, and I'm still good with 3 or 4 guys. I don't know, and it sounds like Matt can go either way. So then what is the wide receiving core's job? I mean, we know Jalen Robinette, and we know Timothy McVay was actually filled in really well as a receiver. But what else? I mean, who else is going to fill in for that wide receiver position?
Depends.
Garrett Brown's gone. Garrett Griffin's gone.
Depends how much they throw, though. If it's depending what Romine will do throwing the ball, which we don't really know exactly. Because if you go back to even Tim Jefferson, he was more of a thrower, or adequate thrower, as well as a runner. The past couple of years, like with Troy Calhoun there, they throw more than they have with Fisher DeBerry their years before. And so I would assume that would be the same case of the throwing game being, like I said, 1,200 yards. But then I don't know who will step up, because the next guy, Ryan Rafidi, tight end, caught 2 catches last year. Driscoll caught 2 catches, a running back. Tyler Williams is their second returning leading receiver, 2 catches last year.
Well, I mean, what's nice, though, is that, you know, at least the guys that are coming in to fill in roles in the offense, you know, at least physically, they're a lot the same as the guys that they're replacing. You know, Reffitt is 6'5 and 230, so if they need a guy to, you know, throw to right down the seam in the heart of the defense, he's a guy who could pop up and they catch that pass and take a big hit. You know, and Tyler Williams is a, you know, guy who's kind of small, like Garrett. Garrett Brown is 5'10", 185. You know, to me, it's whether they're going to be as efficient as Brown and Griffin were. You know, are they going to be able to match those kind of mid-60s percentage catch rates, or is it going to be a little bit closer to what Robinette had last year?
Maybe Robinette just needs to get to 55% on his own, and that takes care of, say, 10 receptions right there.
Yeah, and I also think you're still going to have to rely on Timothy McVay's absolutely dynamic receptions and stuff like that. Because if you look at his yards per target, not his yards per catch, but his yards per target, he averaged 25.6 yards last year per target.
Pretty good.
It's pretty good. Now, obviously, when you move that to yards per catch, it's even higher. But if you have one running back, say Jacoby Owens, Timothy McVay, or whatnot, who they're used as a running back, wide receiver out on the slants and kind of sneak through, that's where your explosive plays are going to come from.
And I think it's going to be McVay because he returns kicks, he receives the ball, he's a touchdown machine. He, for at least the amount of touches he gets, I think he could be similar to Tyler Irvin was for San Jose State toward Air Force this next year. He won't, obviously won't get enough receptions that way, but he's going to be that guy that can put him pretty much anywhere on the field, kick return, punt return, receiver, running back, obviously, that he could be. He's, I think he's that type of capabilities within the offense Air Force runs. And if he can keep those high numbers up, 30 yards a reception, geez, if he can get even 20, keeps it 20 yards reception, still amazing.
The biggest question, though, for this offense is what's going to happen with the offensive line if they restart.
And to all conference players as well. That's a big deal.
Yeah, two of them are being.
Well, I mean, on the bright side, though, there are guys that are coming in who had experience as starters in 2014. Dylan Vale, if I'm looking at this correctly, had 6 starts at center last year. So, you know, that's a guy with half season's worth of experience. UC Rast had a season's worth of experience as backup. Alan Kanowitz, or Kaunitz, excuse me, played in 16 last year, but he started a couple of games back in 2014. So it's not as though the guys who are coming in to replace guys who are leaving are inexperienced. And I think that,
you just have to worry about the guys who are coming in because they are slightly smaller than normal Air Force offensive line guys. I mean, obviously, you can't really say, oh, they're small to begin with because this is Air Force Academy we're talking about. They have very strict weight limits and whatnot. But that being said, though, we're talking about a team. The offensive line, I mean, you see a couple guys who are down to 230 pounds on the offensive line. They go way too fast.
Well, I think they're with them bringing in the amount of guys they are. Like, they have all the, they're all upperclassmen that are coming in. Like, there's nobody that's, not that they'll start a freshman, but a sophomore or something like that. They're all upperclassmen, so it'll take a week or two to get everything going, but they're technically experienced just stuff off how many people they, like, the class they're in.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, we'll get Matt back in a second. I think I inadvertently kicked him out. Sorry about that, Matt. Yeah, we'll come back in a second. So, there's a guy who's 230 pounds. He's not going to play much. He's a senior. Is it Andrew Geekus there? With this offense, they're athletic enough. There will be some timing issues just because with how the offense runs, but I don't think they'll be an overly concern for the most part, but the running game's always – these guys have been practicing this for years. You have, like, some juniors and seniors who are going to come in and start. While they may not be all conference, but they're going to be maybe calling a Sandor will, perhaps. But I think they're going to be fine on the offensive lines because these guys are experienced and they've been around running on the scout team or the JV team or the backups, whatever they've been doing for the past 2 to 3 years.
Right. Matt, what's your opinion on the offensive line?
I'm not so concerned about the offensive line, not only because the guys who are coming in to replace them, you know, they're upperclassmen, so they've been in the system. They probably know it by heart, you know, cut blocks galore and stuff like that. But, you know, the guys that they have who are, I would assume, going to be the starters are guys who had starting experience in the past. You know, Dylan Vale started, you know, 6 games center last year. Alan Kaunitz had, a couple starts in his past. J.C. Rast was a backup who saw playing time all of last year. So, to me, these are guys who have been around the block, even if they haven't had starting roles until now. And it's not like the offense is going to be that much different than it has been since forever. So, I'm not altogether concerned about it.
Oh, Something happened here.
Woo! Sorry.
My Fox Sports Go streaming has not caught up with you because I'm still sitting at 1906 with a goal kick coming from somebody. So I'll keep an eye out for that matchup.
Okay.
So I assume it's a goal, correct, for USA?
Yes.
Thank you. All right. That's a good crowd, too. They're in Seattle. Basically sellout. Looks like 40K or something, 45K?
50.
50, all right. Seattle's your team, right, the Sounders?
So it is my team. So we're talking about – so you guys aren't concerned with the offensive line at all. So that means,
a little bit, but not really.
On one hand, do you think on one hand, then, how many points would you say that this team has to score in order to kind of secure a win? Like, can they go point chasing if their defense doesn't follow through?
They never could go point chasing. That's never the way the offense has been set up.
Okay, so before I answer that question, are we starting to talk about the defense at all?
We can just start talking about the defense because that's a good question to lead into.
Because I'm thinking about what they averaged last year, and that they averaged 33 points a game last year. So even if there is a little bit of drop off, kind of that's on sort of certain backs, play of maybe a wide receiver opposite Robinette. This is still a team that I think, with the schedule that they're going to be facing, which will be two eventually, they should be able to score 30 points a game. So
even against like Utah State defense, those teams
have a problem with that.
Yeah. So yeah, and I'm with you on that. I think. Point chasing is not going to be an issue, but let's go into the defense because the question is their defense was actually pretty darn good for the most part last year. Can they catch up? Can they keep up this year? And the biggest loss they have is on the defensive line, Alex Hansen, who they lost.
That's a big loss, though.
Well, that's 7.5 sacks. Remember, Air Force is not a sacking team.
Well, last year they were. Last year they had 37 sacks as a team, which I think probably surprises everybody.
Yeah.
But that's still a little under 20% of your total sacks.
No, I'm saying on the year they had 37 sacks.
That's what I'm saying. But nearly 20% of it came from one guy.
That's a lot, though. I mean, that's a lot.
Historically, you know, that figure matched what they put up in 2014. So to me, it's not necessarily one guy. You know, if you're looking up and down this roster, there were what? How many guys had more than one sack last year?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5 guys.
Yeah, so, I mean, yeah, losing Hansen is probably going to make a difference at some point.
Steelhammer.
The guys that they're bringing back are guys who have been proven to make plays. You know, Lachlan Dietz had 5.5 tackles for loss last year. You know, Samuel Byers had a few tackles for loss. And the linebacking core was especially active. You know, Jay Dunn had 5.5 sacks. Patrick Healy had a couple of sacks, I believe. So, you know, I think they should be able to compensate for one guy's loss by kind of spreading the production around.
But if they get 30 sacks, that's still plenty, right? Because if they get zero sacks, it's still a good amount.
In the front when they were coming back.
You know what's funny is that the two biggest names, I mean, Alex Hansen's a big name on this defense, but I would argue that the two biggest names aren't even from the defensive line and linebacking core. And really, it was the defensive line and linebacking core which really kind of stole the show underhandedly last year.
How so?
Well, your two biggest names are your two guys who picked up the most interceptions, being Roland LaDipo and Weston Steelhammer. And you're talking but really, what sets up to initiate those ball hawks? You know, it's kind of pressure in front from the defensive line, from the linebackers. It's that pass rush. So they really did their job last year. And obviously with the experience coming back, they only lose one starter. I would expect nothing less of them than to continue.
Now, see, I can only half agree with you with that, because there were some weeks last year where that secondary or the passing defense just as a whole was a complete letdown. And like, if you look at the splits between their wins and losses last year, you know, it's kind of a, you know, they were there some weeks and not in others, you know, because in the six games that they lost last year, they gave up 12 yards per attempt and they only picked off two passes and gave up 15 touchdowns. So to me, there's a lot of talent on the secondary. The secondary could be the best in the conference as a whole.
Look at Phil Still, where he has him.
But are they going to be more consistent than they were last year? Because, I mean, obviously we all love Weston Steele, right?
Absolutely.
He's a hitter, he's a playmaker, but, you know, he can't do it all himself. You know, the guys are around him, not only Oladipo, but Jesse Washington and Brody Hicks. They're going to have to make a few more plays and try to give up a few less big passing plays than they did a year ago. Okay. So, you know, because if you look at their numbers last year, one of the things I've brought up over and over again with a lot of these teams is big plays. And for as good as that defense played in certain weeks last year, they gave up more 20-yard plays through the air than any other defense in the conference. And they gave up 25 plays of 30 yards or more. So if they can at least get back to the middle of the pack in that regard, this could be a scary defense. But to me, that's one of those lingering questions that I want to see, especially with some of the offenses they'll be facing.
Then how is their secondary? Like, I feel like what Phil Still put out, they have their two guys on the first team. Is that, if they're giving up that many big guard plays last year, they have, who's he have, Roland Ladipo and Weston Steelhammer there? Where are those big plays coming from, or why would they be happening?
Well, I think, we've talked a little bit in the past podcasts about turnover luck. And do you think that Air Force last year had a high amount of turnover luck with those guys?
I'm not sure at the moment. I'm not looking at that.
Matt?
Okay, well, I just pull up the number. Do you want me to spoil it for everybody, or do you want to?
Go ahead.
Okay, so they were -5 on the season. You know, they forced 18 turnovers as a defense, which included 11 interceptions, but that was only 8th in the conference. So, you know, the offense was a little more careless than I think you would like to see with 23 giveaways. But I think if they can cut that number down, be a little more, you know, careful with football and offense and make a few more plays on defense, you know, that could make a huge difference.
I think in the interception game, 12 is quite a bit for them. If they can get that to, 8, that puts them at almost turnover margin 0 right there. Just about get, well, just 5, or if you get to 7 or 8, that's a big difference right there. We know they don't throw a ton, so the amount of attempts and completions they have, 12 interceptions is actually much, if you think about it, percentage-wise, is a lot more compared to what other teams do with that type of game where it's where turnovers in a passing game.
Ladipo, by the way, had 17 pass breakups last year.
Ooh.
Which is an insane number.
Yeah, so, I mean, if he can turn a few more of those into interceptions, you know, that's a few more scoring opportunities for the offense. And I think we're all pretty confident in this offense if the quarterback situation settles itself.
Yeah, I didn't even realize he had 17.
I think so.
All right, let's get to games. All right, let's go move on to games from Air Force. So they bring back everybody defensively, just find a replacement for Alex Hansen, and that's about it.
And Luke Strubble is a very, very good punter and kicker.
Yeah, they're settled on that punt kick return. Yeah, I don't know if they'll have. I thought I saw McVay with kick returner. Maybe I was mistaken on that, but they should be fine with Tar Williams and Driscoll back there, assuming those are the two guys. But let's get their schedule. They have the basically the same schedule every year. Open with an FCS team, play a medium team. The only difference is they don't play like they sometimes play a team above. Like
they're not playing a medium team. They're playing Georgia State.
Well, I mean, like they usually play like a maybe a Big Ten or Big 12 team every now and then, but they're not. They got Abilene Christian, Victory, whatever. So, Chris, what do you know about Georgia State?
Managed to make a bowl game last year somehow, some way, but then lost to San Jose State.
Oh, that's right.
So,
really quick, is Georgia State the run option team or is that Georgia Southern? I forget.
Georgia Southern is the run option team.
Georgia State had a quarterback Georgia we thought State. Might cause some issues last year, right? Versus yes. the Spartans. Okay.
Georgia State is a spread team. Okay. And that's what makes this this matchup potentially very interesting because if they have the same kind of problem with allowing big pass plays that they did last year, you know, the Panthers could give Air Force some trouble if they're not careful. I'm trying to see if they still have their quarterback from last year, but I know Nick Arbuckle in 2015 at least was a 4,000-yard passer. And, you know, this was a team that could score points even if they couldn't really stop anybody.
They do not have Nick Arbuckle back. They have zero returning yards on offense.
No.
Passing
they're,
offense.
They're not. Yeah.
Emery Scaffey.
Last year was a one-year fluke.
Yeah. Emery Scaffey, 0-for-3 in passing and was sacked once. Technically, his yards per attempt were -0.4. So there's that.
Oh.
So yeah. The passing.
This is a game that Air Force should handle.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they will handle it, but like I said, if Georgia State can find a quarterback who can run the spread offense, that's the kind of thing that can give Air Force some trouble, I think.
They returned their top two receivers, so that's a big deal there. Big deal there, but they need a guy to throw them the ball, and so that's in week two. Who knows what they'll have? They bring back like look at who they bring back. They bring back basically their whole defense except for a couple guys. And about half of their offensive line. If they have a decent quarterback, this could be an interesting game if it were like week 10, but not week 2. I don't think they'll have everything together to beat an Air Force team who will just probably run at will against them.
Right. Absolutely.
All right.
This week would be the first week versus – I'm saying they're starting off 2-0.
Yeah. I think that's safe to say, right, Matt?
Oh, yeah.
All right, so they go to a non-conference, conference game early, September 24th. And they already have their bye early. So for Air Force, it's a big deal to have their bye week 3. Just because we all know their size restrictions. They're like we talked about their offensive lineman, they had one guy 230 pounds. The biggest they can be is about 280. That's about it. That's kind of the highest end they'll allow them to be. And so by the end of the year, they could wear down a bit, especially if you look further down who they played later in the year. Could be an issue as well, but they start off with Utah State. I think they could beat Utah State. It's in Logan. It's a Saturday, probably 8:30 Mountain Time kick, but Utah State does not have any returning linebackers. They lost them all to the NFL, either drafted or undrafted. So I'm wondering if this would be a huge test for that Aggie defense, but I think Air Force should be able to have quite a bit of success against a newish Aggie defense.
Yeah, I think so too. I'm not high up on Utah State this year. I think they'll be a bowl team, but I don't think they're going to be really anything too special. Especially with losing so much on defense. And I think that Air Force should be able to handle Utah State pretty well.
To me, you know, I think Kent Myers probably going to have himself a very good year.
Agreed.
But, and we'll get to it at some point. I question just how good the passing offense is going to be. Is they're missing, you know, Hunter Sharp is gone. I believe Brandon Spindall is gone too, right?
I believe so as well.
So I feel like there's a ceiling to how good this, you know, the Utah State passing game can be. And if we're talking about, you know, turning plays and turnovers and little stops, you know? I don't think there's any way that Kent Myers is going to throw just 3 interceptions in a season again next year. But with that in mind, you know, if the defense can close in on the performance that they had last year, this should be, like, a big problem. Because, you know,
And a couple other weapons are gone for Navy as well.
Who is missing then? Who are you aware of that's no longer around?
I want to say one of their running backs and one of their wide receivers, but I'm not entirely sure.
So do we even know who the quarterback's going to be?
Does it matter? It's not Keenan Reynolds.
Well, I guess so, since he's with the Ravens and Heisman finalist. Well, should have been a finalist. The helicopter scene would have been amazing, him leaving Philadelphia or wherever the game was at to New York City. But that, unfortunately, didn't happen. Okay.
Here's my question, right? You, Chris, you say that doesn't matter if their quarterback isn't Keenan Reynolds, right?
No, I said it does matter.
Well, okay, but you're saying... Yeah, okay, I understand what you're saying.
I'm saying no Keenan Reynolds, Air Force should win this game. If there is good...
But here's the thing, right? Both of these teams are replacing their starting quarterback from a year ago, right? And I think we all seem to be in agreement that we think the offense for Air Force is still going to be pretty good even without Carson Roberts, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. The difference is Keenan Reynolds was a staple for, you know, 4 years of Navy, and Keenan Reynolds was a staple for 4 years of that Navy offense. Romine at least has been around the past couple of years, you know, on again, off again, starter, kind of sub in, or has been named the starter and his injury has happened. It's not like he's a brand new
one. No, see, to me, it's like even though, you know, even though the midshipmen don't have anybody who's had that kind of in-game experience like Romine did, I think they, if I'm looking at this correctly, they have a guy who's presumably the starter in Tayo Smith, who, one, is a senior, so that means, you know, as a cadet at an academy, this is a guy who knows the system, who's been around it for like 3 years, and, you know, maybe he's not quite as dynamic as Keenan Reynolds was as a passer or as a runner, but they still should be pretty good. I mean, there's a reason that Bill C more or less calls it a 50-50 game. I think he gave the Falcons like a 51% chance to win.
Yes.
I highly disagree with that, because Air Force or Navy loses five of their top six rushers from last year.
Oh, really? You want to name off who they lose?
Obviously, Reynolds, Chris Swain, Quentin.
Chris Swain. That's the guy who I was thinking.
He had 1,000 yards. DeBrandon Sanders, and then Demond Brown, I believe. Demond Brown, yeah. Demond Brown, while only 231 yards, five touchdowns. Easel had six, Swain had 10, and Keenan, obviously, 24. So there's a lot of talent lost, even though everybody behind them are upperclassmen, senior, similar situation at the quarterback. And so unless these guys step up quickly, which production probably could be very close to being similar, but we'll see. It's a game where Navy loses a lot, but Navy always – like, and also, Air Force is going to win by double digits. Navy lose. I didn't realize this. They lose their entire starting offensive line from last year.
Oh, God.
I mean, again, the guys that are coming in, at least some of them have some starting
experience. They do, but still. Man.
I mean, at an academy with the offense that they run, I think that losing so much at those positions matters less than it would be in another place.
Well, I agree. Like I said, the line. Behind them, they're there.
Because the guys behind them, like, know it. Like, they know the system. And so, to me, I think it comes down to the fact that the drop-off from Reynolds to Smith probably a little bit more than it is from Roberts to Romine. And I think quarterback plays more kind of what is going to determine this game. And with that in mind, like, obviously I think it's going to be a close game because it usually is, but I think Air Force has it in them to win.
Yeah, I'm thinking Air Force by about a touchdown victory.
I think they'll win comfortable because with it being week five, it's still kind of early. I think Air Force wins. Didn't really click. They have conference play. Kind of bust through these a little bit. At Wyoming, well, actually, we should stick on that because wasn't last year's result the weird random loss to Air Force? They lost at Wyoming, like, was it 17-14 or something?
Nope,
that's a different game. Sorry. It was, sorry, my mistake, different game. They won 31-17. I think that was 2014. I just want to double check because I want to. Yeah, it was 17-13, 2014. That was the weird loss, but And this game's back. It's back at Laramie. That's where that last loss came from 2 years ago. We don't need to go into every detail on every team here, but Wyoming, new quarterback, it's just Brian Hill and what that defense can do because it was so terrible last year. That's what it really comes down to for Wyoming. I think they had a young defense that gave up too many points. And this is where the passing game could be a reason for Air Force. Either they're good or not good, but kind of to see if they can exploit that, because Wyoming secondary was not anything special last year. That's kind of where everything kind of fell off for them in the pass defense, which was what here. While it was middle of the pack, they gave up 23 touchdowns.
Yeah, I think Wyoming should be an easy win. I'm more concerned about, and I said this in the last podcast, I'm more concerned and interested in how New Mexico plays Air Force, because both these teams are very run option oriented. You know, New Mexico, I think, has a little bit more pieces into play. And it could be very, very interesting. I think I had this one as a loss for New Mexico last week, but I wouldn't be surprised if Air Force could win or lose this game.
Well, remember, it's also in the Cotton Bowl, too. We need to remind people of that who may not have listened to the New Mexico show.
That's right.
Is there a reason for that, by the way? Because it strikes me as very strange that both teams have to, like, travel farther than they would if they just traveled to one of the home stadiums.
And this is a, I believe, supposed to be an Air Force home game, if I'm correct.
Money?
But how much money are you getting? Okay. You know, I mean, how much money would come from this? Part of it, here's the reason. Dang it, stupid Dallas Morning News or whatever. Too many articles I've read. Part of it is that it's around the Texas State Fair, and I believe it's a week before or after the Texas OU game, which is also around the State Fair. Because it says here something from the Sports Day, Dallas Morning News, or whatever, dallasnews.com. State Fair officials announced the game for 2016. I guess a lot of alumni. No, this is an Air Force home game, because they're talking about recruiting, alumni, all the military bases in Texas, so it seems like it was maybe Air Force's choice to move this game. That's what it seems like from right here, reading this first article I came across.
Okay, so here's my stupid prediction. All right, are you ready for this? Starting with that game at Wyoming, those next four games, at Wyoming, home for New Mexico, home for Hawaii, at Fresno State, they're going to drop at least 150 points across those four games.
Say that again?
They're going to drop at least 150 points across those
four games. Oh, 120 points when they play New Mexico, Hawaii, Fresno, and Army?
And, no, starting with Wyoming.
Okay.
So that next month's worth. They're gonna roll.
They have the potential, like, to be honestly, like, I know we're Air Force, like, they should, like, Abilene win, Georgia State win, Utah State, very good chance to win. Navy probably should win. I don't see them losing to Wyoming, maybe New Mexico, but Hawaii, Fresno, Army. Is there any that could be 9-0 going into Colorado State? Is that a possibility?
I think it's a good possibility. I also think they're randomly going to drop one.
Like who, Utah State or New Mexico, maybe? New Mexico,
they could
lose. They could lose to New Mexico.
They could lose to New Mexico. That's pretty much my 50-50. But they're either going to be 8-1 or 9-0 going into that Colorado State.
Are you that confident, Matt?
10-0 coming out of Colorado State.
Oh, 10-0.
I could see that, too.
If they're okay, I know we're jumping way ahead, but
I like Colorado State. But I think Air Force's strengths, especially on defense, kind of plays into stopping what Colorado State does well, or what I think they'll do well. So I have that one as a win as well.
So, and San Jose State also a decent chance for victory?
Should be.
Are we doing it? 11-0?
11-0 going into the Boise State game.
11-0 at home?
No.
That's probably not going to happen, but talent-wise, they're not overly matched really against anybody up until that point.
I had them losing that game against San Jose State.
That's a possibility.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, not to say that it won't be close, but again, you know, I think that strong passing attacks could be that. I think it could be this team's kind of Achilles heel if there is one.
But Phil still has two guys in the first team all conference.
Big plays, man. You can't predict them.
That's very true.
But if I had to bet on one team or two teams to come up with big plays against this defense, it's the last two teams. And that's why I have them losing both of those games.
And plus, the 17 pass breakups, that's hard to emulate. If he goes, he's not going to replicate it. He's not going to turn even a quarter, 10% of those, which basically almost two into interceptions. Odds are he's going to go down in pass breakups. And so I know there's a couple of passing teams on the schedule, especially the last two, and probably Utah State a little bit, and Colorado State, I believe, as well. Whoever their quarterback is going to be at this point, we don't know. I think talent-wise, they're good enough. But again, big plays are hard to predict. But I think it's the quarterback. We know what we're getting, but health is an issue. He's been injured. He's came in here and there the past couple of years to start here, not start here, get hurt, miss a couple games. There's a couple receivers. Their offensive line has to be rebuilt a little bit. But then again, Calhoun seems to have things turned around after that terrible year a couple years ago where they won just two games. And so
here's what I'm concerned about. So, obviously, I think I'm with Matt. I don't think they're going to be it. I think they're going 10-2, and I think it's going to be a loss versus Mexico and a loss versus Boise. But are we being just way overly optimistic with Air Force? Because
yes.
Bill C has them projected at 7.7 wins. Vegas over-under. What does the Vegas over-under have?
I'll find out in a second.
They were also at 7.5.
7.5 or 8?
Without looking at all the over-unders, I feel like double-digit wins, at least over the 7.5 or whatever it happens to be, is probably one of the easiest calls in the entire conference.
San Diego State at 8.5.
And then to me, a lot of it comes down to the fact that they return so much experience on both sides of the football.
All right, it's 8 games from Vegas Insider. So you go 9 or 7. That's a tough one, I think.
Yeah, it's a little tougher, but I still think I'd take the over. And that's why I'm just curious. Are we looking at this way too overly optimistic?
I think
we know the Mountain is just much, much better than the West, but I mean, last week we predicted New Mexico at 8 or 9 wins. We're predicting Air Force at 10 wins at least. I'm sure when we get to the Boise State show, we're going to be predicting them pretty high.
Let me say this. Here's a couple things.
Air Force is kind of like San Diego State, except for the fact that they gave up a few more big plays than the Aztecs did last year. And if they can eliminate those, or at least, you know, kind of reduce those, you know, this is a team that's closer to a conference title than just about anybody else in the conference.
I had a couple things too. We mentioned turnover luck or kind of luck, but like Aztecs, we talked about them. They're what, +22? Air Force is -5. If they can get to a +1 a game, that's +12 overall, +13. That's a huge deal there. But one thing I think we're overlooking again a little bit, I touched on before, it's their having to bye week 3 really hurts this team. That's why probably my projection is going to be, I'm going to go 8-4. I'll just start off with that. We'll go that route to kind of give our predictions. I'm going to say 8-4, where they lose to Colorado State, they lose to San Jose State, they lose to Boise State, not necessarily because they're not better than any of those teams. I think they're not better than Boise regardless if they played in week 5 or whatever off by themselves, but that'll be an issue, and I think they'll lose one more game, like either Utah State or New Mexico, and that's why I think I'd be comfortable saying 8-4. That'd be, however, 2 to 3 conference losses. But that's where I think 8-4, but the high end, I can see double digit wins, but I don't want to. I don't think they'll repeat that. I think 8-4 is where they'll be at.
Matt, do you have them at double digits?
I do. I have them at 10-2 and 6-2 in conference.
Yeah, I've got them. I've got them at 10-2 as well, and 6-2. My question is, what's the low end for these teams?
I still think it's a bowl game. I think it's bowling regardless, right?
I still think, yeah, I still think it's a bowl game. I think it'd be 6-6.
Yeah, I was going to say something along those same lines. I think there's too much talent, like even with the pressing questions that we've talked about, to, you know, fall out of that bowl contention.
I would say, like, my low end, really, it's only 7-5. I don't think see them going, because they went 8-6 last year, but, like, looking at who they play, they don't. Like, last year they played Michigan State. They played Navy with Keenan Reynolds. They played at Boise. They played some pretty good teams last year overall and where they played them. But the only teams I could really see them losing, like, is a road game at, like, these road games at Utah State, New Mexico, and then the last three games via Rams, Spartans, and Broncos. I don't see them losing to Army, Fresno, even Navy. They get them at home, but Navy has a massive rebuild offensively. Lose a ton of talent. And unless Brian Hill goes for 350 yards rushing, Wyoming's not going to beat them. So their low end is still 7 wins for me. So I'm kind of, maybe I'm playing it safe saying overall 8-4, but I just think they're going to trip up late in the year because of the schedule of how many games are 10 games in a row. That's tough on any team, let alone a team. These guys are up at, what, 5 a.m., 6 a.m., doing 18 credit hours. There's height, weight restriction on who you can have. They practice less than any team in the conference. Navy, Army, the only other teams that practice the same amount or limited amount. I think they're limited to, what, 90 minutes a day, which is well below the 20 hours allotted. So that's all. I think that's going to – I know it's the same every year, but I just think that many games in a row, that's where I'm coming at, like 7 or 8 is – they could surprise and go 10, but I don't see it this year.
Yeah. So is that it? So –
Well, okay, well, what's the ceiling?
Ceiling's 12-0.
Beating Boise State?
Yeah, they did it last year.
I mean, 2 years ago?
Yeah, 2 years ago.
With 7.
And they did it last year, too.
They beat them last year as well? Why, is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, I...
You are correct, I apologize.
I was gonna say, I can't disagree with Chris.
I think it's possible, but it's just hard. I don't want to predict 12-0. I could, if we're doing that, there could be I could have three teams go 12-0. Just because.
Well, I'm just saying, like, if what is the best case scenario? And I think if everything breaks just right for this team, they solve their quarterback problem, they solve their issues with big pass plays on defense. This is a team that could be playing on New Year's Day, I think.
Absolutely. Potential is there.
So we could see this.
This up at the end of the year.
Could we see, this would be quite the, this would be amazing if this were to happen. So we like San Diego State. I think what did I say, 12-0, I think, for them? I don't recall, but they could go undefeated with their schedule. It's not out of the possibility. Boise State with their offense, they have a few question marks defensively, but offense, they bring back everybody, have the best skilled players in the conference. They could be undefeated heading late. And if this would be the most best turnaround ever for the conference, if it's Air Force and Boise both undefeated on Black Friday, and we know how that turned out for Fresno a couple years ago, but if they're both undefeated, the winner plays an undefeated San Diego State, that's a pretty big deal.
Absolutely.
Do either of you think that's even remotely possible?
Yeah. I'm with Matt. Matt and I think both agree. It's not only possible, it should be doable.
What do you think that would do for...
Because, I mean, to me, it's like... I mean, obviously, they'll need a lot of help from a lot of the teams on their schedule. I envision that if, you know, they beat, like, an 8 or 9 win, they beat, you know, an 8 or 9 win Mexico, and they beat an 8 or 9 win Colorado State, and they beat a double-digit win Boise State, and then beat, you know, a double-digit San Diego State team, I think that's a pretty good resume, don't you?
I think so.
Yeah, for sure. I still think it comes down to what Houston does if they, because they play Oklahoma and Louisville and American still.
I honestly don't think Houston's going to go undefeated. I don't either.
I don't think they'll beat Oklahoma.
I don't think they're going to be your top group of five teams.
Right now, I think we have to say that because what they have back, and I think they have to be that case because they have the schedule. They did well last year. They have a famous Aztecs, a very fortunate plus minus. But I just think sitting here in the middle of the summer, we have to say they're number one. But I would say, like I've told other people before, Houston, then San Diego State, then Boise State are my top teams for that spot. It's always – here's what's going to come down to be – we'll get to this later in a huge preview. We'll finish this up, maybe keep it about an hour. It's always – 90% of the time is going to come down between the Mountain West champ and the American champ for that Big Ten bowl game. Even the BCS is always Mountain West or WAC with Boise. Northern Illinois got in there once, and – that's what's going to come down to be. So whoever wins the conference, they have 10 or 11 wins, they're going to get in. Hope probably 11 will be preferred. I guess 12 title game, but one loss. But if they're sitting there undefeated that late, let me throw this out there. This is crazy, but let's just say the Mountain, because I know Aztecs are good, but they want strength of schedule. Let's just say it's Boise because they have the name and everything. They're probably not going to be ranked. They beat their teams that play early in the non-conference schedule. They beat BYU later in the year is pretty good. And they beat two undefeated teams back to back. Would there be any way they could be even Air Force? I'd toss Air Force just because. But would Boise? Would there be any way they'd be in the playoff consideration if they beat those two teams the final 2 weeks of the year? Or is that still never going to happen?
I'm not entirely sure. I'm still going to stick to my guns and say the Mountain West champ, until we lose, is going to kind of have a stronger hold over that five spot. Unless there are some big upsets that happen from the league.
I don't think it's going to happen, but it'd just be interesting to see if whoever be, whether it be Air Force, especially the Mountain, if there's multiple undefeated teams late and they knock them off week after week, whether it's Air Force, Boise, or vice versa, that'd be great. If Air Force were to get there, it'd be pretty cool if they were to get to a New Year's Day game and play somebody in the Orange Bowl or something like that, or the Fiesta Bowl or Cotton Bowl, whatever bowl they go to. But so I think we're all saying bowl games. Well, let's start with Matt really quick. Are they going to, well, if we go percentage-wise, what would you say their odds of winning the Mountain Division would be?
I'd say about 30%.
To win the division? Okay, what about you, Chris?
Yeah, I'm going to give it about 35%.
Really? That seems low. I'm going like 50% for them to win the division. Not the conference. I'm talking about just the Mountain Division.
Really? You're going to put it that high?
Who's going to beat them? I get the final month, but I know it's weird. I say 8-4, but I still give them a 50-50 chance to win.
No, because are you even thinking about New Mexico in here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but think of this. The tough games they have, they get – the contenders they have, I think the real contenders in the Mountain are Boise, Air Force, and you got to consider New Mexico because how close they were last year. Utah State, well, maybe, but I think they'll surprise –
Well, then it's not a 50-50.
Well, no, hear me out here. Yeah, I think it still is. It's not between two teams. I can say there's a 50% chance for them. 20, I don't have to have every percentage assigned to a team, but I'm thinking, I think it really comes down to those last 3 weeks of the year. And maybe I'm an optimist, but those teams have to play the same teams as well. Rams play Boise, Spartans do, New Mexico, all that stuff. They play each other. I just think they were there last year. They're not afraid of Boise State. They beat them twice in a row. They get them at home this year. They get a Rams team, which could be pretty good at home as well. I just think the way the schedule sets up, what's their toughest game? Is it in conference? Is it really at San Jose State?
No, it's home at home versus Boise.
True, but they've beaten them twice in a row, and so there's no – it probably is, but I think the losable game, probably the Rams. I guess Boise's right, but I still think it's a 50% chance to win. It's between them and Boise, I guess, and that's the final week, and those are the two teams.
I guess I just give more teams outside chance of surprising us than you do then.
Yeah, I'm with Matt here. I think if you're talking about a true 50-50 chance, then it comes down between Boise State and Air Force. I think if you give any other teams a chance, you know, they have a chance. And what we saw from New Mexico and Air Force last year, along with Boise, where those three were the main competitors up until the last point. And I think that it's not going to be a split 33-33-33, but I think some teams are going to have a little higher, some teams are going to have a little lower, but it's going to come down between those three teams.
That makes sense. We'll just see. I just maybe give them the edge because they were there last year. So we'll get to all this stuff again down the road. Once we do our giant preview later on, we'll go into more detail. We don't need to discuss division champs right now, but I think it's safe to say Air Force has a very good chance to do that. Any last parting thoughts about Air Force? Anything we missed?
Nope.
One more thing that I don't think is going to happen again. We talk about turnovers intermittently. But last year, when they turned the ball over, when they turned it over three times in a game, they were 1-5. And honestly,
you
I
said
think
three
that that's
times when they turned it over three times a game.
Yes.
Interesting. That makes sense. You turn it over three times, you probably shouldn't be winning.
I see that.
We'll see. Like I said, turnover margin theirs wasn't the best. Like if they're gonna have this special season, things have to go extremely right. But I think, like Matt said, big plays is an issue. Potentially, especially against passing teams. Like with Boise's offense, that'll be a huge deal. And playing Kenny Potter and possibly even the Rams, whoever their starter is. And then it's that. I think it's that and kind of consistent quarterback play, really. Just that's kind of where I'm at. But we don't need to repeat again because I can go in a big circle for 10 more minutes of us repeating what we've been saying. But that's kind of what we're doing tonight. So we have the Air Force show this evening. Wrap it up. Bowl game, possible conference title. Hey, things go right. New Year's Day bowl game could be in the works, maybe. Maybe not. We'll see. Who are we discussing next week, guys? Any preference?
Utah State.
Wyoming.
Oh, Wyoming's a good one. Yeah, let's do Wyoming.
All right, we'll next show, Wyoming Cowboys featuring Brian Hill. And can we start bowling puns again, or is it still too early for that? All right, we'll get to that later. Talk about Wyoming Cowboys next week. Craig Bull, will their defense be better? Is their quarterback play better? They got Tanner Gentry coming back, wide receiver. That's correct, right?
We'll find out.
I will do the research later and let you know. That's a great way to end this. But iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Google Play Music, find us there. Leave us a review. Check our site at mwcconnection.com for all the preview stuff. This time of the year, we'll have our top 50 countdown in full swing. We'll have random previews and maybe some more trick shots. We'll have that coming up. But thanks for listening to our show, and we'll see what happens to the Zoomies come the fall.